This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi. Theory. Welcome to High Theory.
In this podcast, we get high on the substance of theory. I'm Kim Adams.
And I'm Sharunik Boshu.
We are two tired academics trying to save critique from itself.
Today, we're talking about autofictionalization with Klaus Andersen. Klaus, would you mind introducing yourself?
Yes, of course. I'm Klaus Andersen. I'm the Paul and Renata Madsen Assistant Professor in Scandinavian Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Thank you so much for coming to High Theory.
Thank you for having me.
First question, what the heck is autofictionalization?
Well, autofictionalization is, and I think kind of as the term suggests, somehow related to what we talk about as autofiction. So maybe actually I should start a little with autofiction and explain what that is, at least the way I see it.
Yeah.
Autofiction is a subgenre of the novel that involves a blurring of sorts between fiction and reality that would be highly problematic in a traditional autobiography if it was an autobiography of a former president or when no athlete. In its most basic form, the autofictional novel is a novel in which the protagonist and narrator has the same name as the author, and that claims somehow to be truthful. But it also often employs tropes that we rarely find in autobiography, and that is metafictional passages, digressions, fragmentation, metatextuality, hybridity, formal experimentation, and so on and so on.
Right.
The term also has a long history, especially in France, where critics and scholars have been discussing autofiction for at least 40 years. But around 2008, in the wake of the financial crisis, we saw an explosion of autofiction outside France, where the novel seems to ascend now to create a new sense of authenticity.
Yeah.
And the Norwegian author Karl Ove Knausgård's six-volume My Struggle, a novel that inspired a host of other writers to start writing in this style as well, is simply the pinnacle of this trend.
Mm.
So that is autofiction. Autofictionalization, as I define the term, is a mode of narration that characterizes many of these autofictional novels. By mode of narration, I'm simply referring to how these novels are being told. And autofictionalization is a mode of narration where the narrative consciousness or voice is placed with the experiencing character, not with the narrator.
I see.
And maybe if I give a couple examples here, right?
Yeah.
If we take Proust, right? In La Richeur, that opens like famously with, "For a long time, I used to go to bed early." Here we have the narrator in the presence, right? Looking back at his childhood back then. The narrative voice or consciousness is with the narrator, not with the little boy lying in a bed. But if we then take an example from Karl Ove Knausgård's My Struggle, a good example, and I'm not the first one to point this passage out, is where Knausgård is 8 years old and he goes and talks to his father who is out doing yard work. And just before he turns the corner, he stops running. He's really excited, right? Because he has been told that he's not allowed to run in the yard. And then he talks to his father. And then the father, just before he leaves, says, "And remember, no running." And then the little boy, the 8-year-old boy, he says, "How did he know I had been running?"
Right.
And a little later, he says again, "How the hell did he know how I had been running?" And a little later, we hear that phrase again, "How could he have known?"
Right.
And of course, the narrator, Karl Ove Knausgård, knows how the father knew. We later know it too, but we don't learn it until the character actually learns about it.
Right.
And that's what I'm talking about with auto-fictionalization, right? The narrator, he knows what happened to him in his childhood, but he kind of lets us experiencing it with the character at the time. So that's what I mean when I talk about auto-fictionalization.
It's interesting because on the one hand, we have the effect of omniscience that Orientalist traditions create, and that has particular political underpinnings. But here we have a kind of second degree fictionality. You talked about this kind of efflorescence of auto-fictional novels after the 2008 financial crisis. So what are the socioeconomic underpinnings of this, and why do you think that happens then?
What the financial crisis of 2008 revealed, for those who didn't know it, was that a whole financial system was basically built on fiction, right? Mm. We started hearing about derivatives. That's where we hear about all these other financial instruments that, in essence, were built on fictional money. And I think we can make the argument, or at least suggest, that there might be a correlation here. When we see that what we always have heard and been told had been the stable capitalist foundation under our society turns out to be nothing but fiction, then authors turn to reality. It kind of becomes a way to counter, or at least to establish something that is true, something that is concrete, and something that is real as well. And I think maybe it's also something that is reflected in the materiality of these novels. I've talked to a lot of people that have read Knausgård over the years, but none of them seem to really be interested in reading him in ebook format. And those who have, they always say, "Oh, I want to buy the physical books."
Right.
So I think there's something both in terms of the reality that they claim to write out, but also the physicality of the books.
Right. This actually reminds me, when I was a teenager, I used to only buy really long novels because I thought it was my money's worth. Why would I pay a bunch of money for Portrait of an Artist as a Young Man, which is really thin, when I can just buy War and Peace?
You say that as if it's something you have grown out of. I haven't. I'm completely there still. So, yeah, and I think it's, for me too, there is the longness of it, right? I mean, it just gives me a longer experience.
Okay, next question. How do we use auto-fictionalization?
That's a good question. I think most obviously, auto-fictionalization is a way to distinguish that kind of narration that we find in auto-fiction. And I think it is important to be able to describe what's going on formally in texts and in the world we live in. When I refer to auto-fictionalization as fictional, I try to use it not as the way we normally understand fiction in opposition to reality. My understanding of fiction is much more inspired by, or maybe informed by, newer rhetorical approaches to fictionality, especially by Richard Walls, but also by James Phelan and Henrik Skov-Nielsen, who sees fictionality not as cut off from the actual world, but as a way of engaging with it. Mm. So the term can be used to describe how these authors describe their life in concrete particularity and how they situate themselves in a potential and possible past by placing the narrative consciousness in that past.
Right.
So it kind of becomes a way to apply something that seems similar to free indirect discourse in autobiographical or novels, autofictions, and be more precise in talking about what is going on.
Okay, so how will autofictionalization save the world?
It won't. and honestly, I think that's a good thing. When we ask that question, right, how will this change the world? Of course, I know it's provocative, but it also implies a certain utilitarian line of thinking that I'm very skeptical of when it comes to literary studies. Because when we insist on applicability and on relevance, it paradoxically often leads to the opposite, that we become acutely aware that there is none.
Right.
It's a way of talking down to both our students and to the general public. Most people understand that studying literature, studying certain aspects of literary text, can be interesting and can be relevant and even important when it comes to understanding what is going on. But I think they will consider me somewhat deluded if I claim that it will save the world or make it better, studying autofictionalization. But that aside, like most scholars, I think what I do is important. My scholarship adds to a conversation and to a field of knowledge about the world we live in and the literature it produces. That knowledge is what I try to convey in my scholarship. It's what I try to convey to my students and to people I talk to, right? And to help them become more aware of the world they live in. And sometimes being able to identify certain aspects in a literary text is enough actually to spark an interest in a student and encourage them to go off on their own pursuit of trying to understand what literature is and what it does, and then how it relates to the world we live in. To be quite honest, on some dates, that's really all you can ask, I think, as a scholar.
Klaus, thank you so much for coming to High Theory and talking to us about autofictionalization.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for listening to High Theory.
If you like our podcast, please review and subscribe on Spotify, iTunes, Patreon, or wherever you get your podcast fix.
Sharonic Bosu manages our social media presence. Owen Quinn composes our theme music, and Kim Adams and Sharonic Bosu edit our audio.
You can also find us at hightheory.net.
We hope you have a highly theoretical day.